This episode of the God and Mental Health Podcast is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. So I have been talking to you all a lot in my podcast, as well as hearing on the ads that I've been really paying attention to a little TMI for a second, my cycle. I have also been talking to my clients so much who are women about the idea of cycle syncing, especially for my women between the ages of around 25 to 40, kind of when you're hitting that time frame where you're really starting to pay attention more to your body. And you know what I don't miss at all? The vicious week before my period. I am someone that when before the week before my period comes, I am just craving so many sweets and fried foods. And I'm just a little more tired. Sometimes I'm down and emotional. And now it's just easier for me to manage my PMS with estrogen control. And so I want to talk to you really quickly about this amazing product because it has significantly helped, especially as I've been paying a lot more attention to my mood swings. I've been tracking my mood throughout the month and just being a little bit more mindful on just how am I actually feeling. We as women, our hormones really, really do impact the way we feel. And so Happy Mammoth, they are a company that is science-backed, and they make products that are completely dedicated to ingredients that are proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it absolutely shows. I have loved using their products, and the biggest benefit is I just feel like myself again. And that's what women mention over and over in their reviews. In fact, there are over 17,000 reviews for their products. And so if you are interested in trying out these products, but also being able to manage some of those symptoms for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code THERAPY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code THERAPY for 15% off today. Now, let's get back to the show.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This episode of The Therapy is a Christian Podcast is brought to you by The Therapy Reflection Journal. The Therapy Reflection Journal is your personal journal for your therapy experience. Whether you are just starting therapy for the first time or currently in therapy, you can utilize this journal throughout your process. This journal was designed for you to write down topics and themes that you and your therapist discuss throughout your counseling sessions. There's a place to keep track of your mood, things to work on in between sessions, and an entire place for you to reflect on what you and your therapist talked about. Take this journal with you consistently throughout your counseling experience to dig deeper and see growth in your mental health like never before. You can go to RosinRenee.com to purchase, or the link is in the description box. Now, let's start the show. The Therapy is a Christian Podcast is all things mental health and Christ. We specifically talk about how mental health and God are merged together to foster growth, healing, and making mental health a normal conversation. I'm your host, Rosin Renee, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Rosa Renee, and welcome back to another episode of the show. I'm super excited today because I'm interviewing one of my sisters.
sis. From so I know y'all have been hearing episodes here and there about these sisters that I met at the Find Your Voice Academy retreat from November 2019 with Tatum. And so I am interviewing another sister. Her name is Allison, and we met at the retreat. And I'm super excited about Allison's interview in that she has such a scope around postpartum everything. And she has a therapy experience. And I just wanted her to come on here and talk about postpartum, because even for me, as I'm preparing to have my son in December, I don't know anything really about postpartum depression, what it looks like. I've heard from like people. So I just want her to like talk about this. You all get a scope of like what it looked like for her and like some of the things that she did to help with it. So sis, say hey.
Hi, everybody. Hello, hello.
So Allison, so I want you to just tell us one, a little bit about you and what you do. And don't forget that you have a podcast.
Yeah, I know, girl, you gotta remember these things. So my name is Allison Nick. I am a wife, a mommy of two little people, small little people, child. My little girl just turned two, my little boy turns four. And I am a side hustler with my business, The Calling FM, where we help moms find peace and purpose by being vulnerable about postpartum and our faith. I do have a podcast. Like she said, it's the Four Moms podcast, where we pretty much have these open and candid conversations about these things. By the time this episode come out, my t-shirt line will be out. So I do have a, I do have a t-shirt line that's all about moms declaring our motherhood and our postpartum. So that's super exciting. And then my first baby, my prayer journal, Search and Surrender, How to Simplify and Strategize Your Prayer Life. And so, yeah, it's really exciting. I am a full-time employee at this time, but that's a whole another journey with postpartum chat. But it's been a really good experience. I'm actually at a job now where it's more flexible and it's less mentally stressing, praise God. But tis me in a nutshell. And I know this beautiful girl is about to be a mommy, or probably is a mommy by the time this comes out.
Pray for them, Chad. Just pray for them. Because, you know, being pregnant, having a baby, every day I'm like, there's so much I didn't know, you know?
Chad.
I had no reason to go down those aisles in Target. Girl, the diaper options, but we're not gonna go on this tangent, but the diaper options,
it's so many. It's like paper towels and toilet paper. Like,
I could save us all if they just made one, if they all came together and made one diaper that works for all pages. I know that's not possible, but my God. So the more and farther along this journey, the more I realize I have been sheltered and knowing things about babies. People require so much. And expensive. You know what I'm saying? But I'm excited. So, Allison knows all about baby boy and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, girl.
Tell us a little bit about postpartum, but also adding another layer to that, tell us a little bit about your experience. So kind of overview what postpartum is. So for people who do and don't know, and then talk about your experience as well.
Sure. So postpartum literally means, the word literally means after birth, typically referring to a woman after she gives birth. But it can obviously, involve the men. Actually 4% of dads, experience postpartum, depression after having kids. But anywho, so that's the word postpartum. Postpartum depression is typically what people think about whenever you say the word postpartum. And that kind of goes into the mental health aspect. So you kind of have your baby blues, which typically lasts for a few weeks after you have the baby. Most of the time it just deals with exhaustion, kind of your initial schedule change. But kind of after a while, you kind of kick back into it, things start to level out, and you get to be pretty good. with depression, obviously that adds a mental health component. And you talk about most time, you know, anxiety and depression. You're actually trying to figure out ways to kind of keep yourself on track. Most of the time, moms kind of get lost in the change in their in another layer of their job. As moms, trying to balance different things, and it involves, you know, not really taking care of yourself, but really getting lost in a lot of different aspects. So that kind of is a mental health part of it. And then there's another level, which is postpartum psychosis, which is rare. I think only about 10% of moms actually hit this level, but this is like complete mental breakdown. You kind of just get a little bit taken out in a sense. And it's very overwhelming to the part that it's like, you're not depressed. You're not anxious. You're on a whole different level where you really have to, if you haven't already had help like therapy or like, you know, having someone help you guide you through and help you break things down in your life, it's just that level. Most time people have to be, you know, taken to a hospital or maybe even on medication, which isn't a bad thing. But it's just a different layer of, it's just a different level of the postpartum depression. But there's different levels to it. And most moms endure the different levels after having a child. So, yeah, my experience with going through postpartum, it kind of varied with both of my kids. With Joseph, my firstborn, I think I had more of the baby blues. Initially, the few weeks afterwards, after having him, it was a schedule change. I was breastfeeding. I was up every 2 hours because he ate every 2 hours on the dot. And it was frustrating because you wake up to feed this baby and your husband over here sleep, snoring at the top of his lungs, and I'm tired. And so what had to happen is that we had to have a schedule change. So I started pumping. So on his like early morning feeding, like his 1 a.m., my husband, who stays up, he's a night owl, would get up and he would give him the bottle. So at least I could have a good 5 to 6 hours of straight sleep uninterrupted. So I would sleep from about 11 to about 5. I would feed him before I would get ready for work. And then we kind of just go from there. So after we figured that out and I was actually getting sleep, I was cool. I was cool because I wasn't as tired, wasn't as exhausted. I kind of fell into the role. You know, we both had some frustrations because at the time he was staying at home more because he didn't have a job at that time. And so he probably dealt with more frustrations initially than I ever understood or experienced because he was there more than I was. So then we got pregnant with Gemma. My little girl, and that was a completely different experience. I mean, it went to a pack that, so after I had Gemma, it was very hard because you have this toddler who's so used to having all this attention, and you have this newborn whom you have to give all of your attention to. And it was never a thing where he was jealous of her. He was just mad at us. Joseph was mad at us because us as parents, we weren't paying attention to him at all. And so that was a little frustrating, but, yeah, after having her, I feel like I went into postpartum depression. I feel like I still have doubts of, postpartum depression. And at the time I was not diagnosed, but I have now with anxiety and depression and those sort of things. It was very different. I felt like I was just in like on a hamster wheel. And just doing the same thing all the time. And it was just, although she was a different baby, she slept for about 4 hours versus Joseph sleeping for 2. It was very hard to manage both of them, to figure things out. My husband and I were not in a good place. So you're having to be a wife over here and cater here. You're having to be a mom to these two little people. It was just times where I would just, you have to take baths and give children baths, but then you're never alone. I was never alone. And it was just so much. And even at one point, well, at probably the first, I would say 4 to 5 months of Gemma being born, I drank every time I breastfed her. She drank every 4 hours. So every time I breastfed her, I was drinking as well. And so I had figured out towards the end of breastfeeding with Joseph that, okay, you can have a standard drink. And by the next time that you breastfeed, as long as you're not inebriated mentally, it's pretty much out of your system. So I learned that early on. Maybe my eighth month of breastfeeding him was when I started drinking with Joseph socially. But with Gemma, since I knew this information, it was almost immediately coming home. And since she drank every 4 hours, I knew I was good. And so I would literally, every time she drank, I would take probably a shot or something. And it was even to a point where I was taking drinks to the bathroom to go take showers. And then it probably wasn't until maybe 3 months into it that I realized my husband was drinking. He's a man. He has some scotch or whatever when he gets home from work, but we were both drinking a lot during that time, and that was our way of coping with it. And I did not understand, or I didn't realize at the time until maybe Jim was like 4 months old, that I'm like, oh, you're drinking too? Didn't know, because we were in such a uneasy space and that we weren't communicating as much. So, I mean, all these different layers, you know, have an effect. And then, of course, you know, you're typical, your body is all out of whack, trying to wear all types of wraps and all these types of things to kind of make your body look and feel good. But it was just a lot. And so it wasn't until literally New Year's Eve, God has spoke to me and said, like, hey, you're not going to drink for the year 2019. I was like, oh, okay, all right. And so although I do feel like that was a coping mechanism, I don't feel like I was addicted in any way, because literally Christmas Eve, I drank the rest of my stash. On New Year's Eve, I drank the rest of my stash. And I didn't have any more drinks for the year of 2019, but it helped me to understand when was best for me to drink and when it wasn't. I could kind of identify my mental state a little bit better of like, okay, I'm socially drinking versus I feel bad and I want to drink, but I probably shouldn't drink. But yeah, it was just a lot of different things. So of course, mentally it was taxing and it was overwhelming, and it was very hard. And then at the end of 2019, I was able to get into therapy. Surprisingly, go ahead.
We go hit that part yet, because I want to dig into what you said. Because one, ooh, you said so much. Like,
I did.
So from what I've heard about postpartum and kind of what you described, just to give this like a recap a little bit, because I even, as you were talking, I had kind of pulled up what postpartum psychosis is. So for everyone that is not a mental health professional or doesn't know anything about it, I can kind of explain this knowing the background on it. With having depression can look like, and this probably is especially for moms who are just having a baby, you're coming off a lot of hormones. I can also identify when I first got pregnant, I went through a little bout of depression. And it was, the emotion wave was so uncontrollable in my mind at the time that I felt like I just wasn't handling my emotions well. And because I didn't have like a lot of people to like say, what am I experiencing? Like, y'all would tell me, hey, that's normal. But I'm like, this don't feel normal. Okay, this don't feel good. I don't like not having control of my emotions. It wasn't until I went back to therapy that I wanted to talk to my therapist, because I could get some tangible tools on how to deal with the emotional shifts that happen. So now when they happen, I'm more relaxed because it's not as overwhelming. And I'm also able to verbalize what I'm feeling to be able to say what the trigger could be. So as it goes into depression related to postpartum, when you have the baby, I'm not there yet, but from what I've heard with postpartum depression, when you have the baby, your hormones are all over the place still, because it's adjusting to the baby having been born. You're also like, your mother hormone is kicking in, which is oxytocin, which is a love hormone, which if you're not getting a lot of, if you're not producing a lot of oxytocin, like that can impact you and baby's bond, so on and so forth. And so the baby blues, like you said, is like a mild form of sadness or what you, because you're also adjusting to now not getting as much sleep, having a new schedule. Mm-hmm. For you, like you said, with the first one, it was a little bit different than this, excuse me, than the second one. Whereas the second one, you have two kids.
Bible.
Two kids that you're having to manage. And additionally with that, trying to figure that out. And so with depression, that goes into like not wanting to get out the bed, losing interest in activities, having struggles mm-hmm. taking baths, literally getting up and brushing your mm-hmm. teeth, literally is like
normal things.
Normal activities. And so then when it gets into psychosis, so I'm going to explain this a little bit deeper, that goes into a little bit of a higher thing because you can start having intrusive thoughts, which could be leading to like wanting to hurt your child or seeing or hearing things you that aren't there, feeling very irritable, feeling like you got to do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Rapid mood swings, be feeling paranoid, like something bad is going to happen. Feeling as though you have difficulty communicating. What else? Decrease in, like I'm reading this, is decrease need for sleep or inability to sleep. So if you're struggling mm-hmm. with those things, that's a little bit higher than in the depression stage. Definitely seek help because you might have to get either, like you said, hospitalization and or maybe even some medication to help cope with that. But you want to be very communicative about it because it does lead to other things if it's not treated. And you don't want to be able, you don't want to not communicate if you're having these thoughts because there's a reason for it. And so mm-hmm. I just wanted to pivot with that a little bit and kind of provide some more background. And there's also postpartum anxiety where you can be very anxious as well, struggling with depression, but also just feeling very anxious and worried and nervous and all of those kinds of things as well. So
yeah, just like you can have depression, you can have the anxiety, and sometimes they kind of just go pair and pair. Like a lot of people that have depression have anxiety too. Disorder, I guess you could say it's a mood disorder. It's so weird using these terminologies and languages, but but having those things as well. Yeah
So in going with that then, so talking about the way you cope, did you know that you had postpartum depression?
So interesting enough, before I had Joseph, my husband is a paramedic, and he came to me and he was like, hey, if you start feeling these ways, like you don't, you know, like you don't want to hold Joseph, or like you don't want to do things, or you just like you want to be really mopey and these, he was like, please just let me know so we can at least keep communication open. So with Joseph, like I said, it was kind of more baby blue. So I was able to kind of be like, hey, babe, I'm really exhausted and I'm tired of looking at you sleep. We got to figure something out. It was an easier fix, in my opinion. But with Gemma, it was just, I knew that I could say I was definitely irritable. I was very irritable because there was just so much going on. I knew I wasn't normal. I guess that's the best way to say it. I knew I wasn't normal. I didn't know how to solve it. And I just kept going with my day. So, yeah, everybody was pretty much really on edge at the house because I didn't know what to do. But I knew something wasn't right, but I also felt like I just need to get it together. Like with Joseph, I need to get it together. I got to figure out a fix. But
not to interrupt you, but in saying that to say, many times when we're struggling in general, like, this is mm-hmm. like just saying with postpartum in general, when we have struggles with depression or anxiety, our first thought is just keep going and don't communicate mm-hmm. it because I don't even know how to communicate what I need. And if I say I don't want to be around my kid, mom guilt can kick in of, I'm a bad mom, I'm a bad parent, I'm not doing a good job, I'm a horrible parent. And if I say that, that further lets the identity of who I feel like I am already, I'm thinking about myself, be prevalent. So you try to avoid that, which in that avoidance further kind of puts you in that rabbit trail of, I'm already not doing a good job, or whatever you might think.
Yep.
And so you don't communicate, but what that does is it turns into a snowball effect of these internalized feelings on at a time that you don't express. And so in general, people may not express to their friends or family. They may have the support, they may have the people they can tell, but they don't say it because they don't want to look crazy, or they don't want to, like they're not doing a good job or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And truly, in all actuality, what that is like, it's a cry for help, but you sometimes just don't know how to verbalize it. And the biggest thing that I can say is verbalize. I'm going to tell everybody if I'm feeling it. If I ain't feeling it, if I'm tired, my mama and them know this, okay? Let's just go. My mama knows I'm a napper. She has told me this whole pregnancy, I already know how you gonna be when baby boy gets here. I'm like, girl, I know I'm gonna want to nap. Sleep deprivation.
Allison, it don't work, huh?
It don't. Now, I probably will adjust, and I'm okay with the adjustment. I'm cool with that. But I also know me, that naps are vital. So if I'm exhausted, I'm going to be like, y'all, take this milk in the freezer that I'm going to pump, make a bottle, and let me go sleep for 3 hours, okay, or something. Or that, you know what I'm saying? Because it's just, it's vital to have support, but it's also vital to verbalize that you need support. So kind of going into that, not really saying anything, that drove kind of the desire to drink.
Yeah, that definitely drove it, because it was, you know, something you kind of just pick up in college. It's something that you just, it's easy. And I always had a supply because my husband was always buying it. So, you know, I didn't have to shovel out no money. I was good. And I just thought it was just a number or something that you can just like, oh, it's just going to just keep me level. I'm be chill. But in reality, it was, because alcohol is a depressant. So reality, it was really just bringing me down, and it was making me more agitated. It was just increasing the emotions that I was already feeling. So in reality, it wasn't helping me at all. But it's what I felt like I needed at the time. And it was, you know, it's like, okay, this is what, you know, this is the only solution that I have at this time, because everything else is happening. I feel like I can't even control it, but I can control this.
Yeah.
Everything, I can't control these two kids running around and screaming at the top of their lungs, and I don't want to take a bath. You got to take a bath. Like, it was just, I can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
So you based, how did you overcome it?
So with, I'll say with the alcoholism, or just some of the drinking, that was purely God speaking to me. And just saying, yeah, you're not drinking for 2019. Okay. And like I said, I drank my stash, and I didn't drink for the entirety of 2019. And looking back, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But there were definitely some moments where, like, you know, you go out, or, you know, Jay and I, we would drink together, and he was like, oh, I ain't got no drinking buddy, like, this is just, and it made me feel bad, because it's like,
girl, let me tell you, that's how Nico was when I told him I wasn't drinking, because you remember when I told him, when I said, oh, baby, in November 2019, so nobody, I ain't really told y'all my pregnancy story yet, but November 2019, I was like, I'm not drinking until I get pregnant. Like, I'm not drinking at all in faith that I'm going to be pregnant. So I was like, if I get pregnant November 2020, baby, I'm not drinking all 2020. Yes. And Nico was like, I can't go have a drink with my wife. You not pregnant right now. So what's going on? Like, why can't I drink with you? And I'm just like, because I'm standing in faith that we're going to be pregnant. He's like, you just doing the most. You doing the most. I'm like, no. I am believing for us to have a baby. And I was so serious about that because I was just like, no. So he, drinking buddy, I get it. Even now, he's like,
yeah.
Well, my drinking, because he told his coworker the other day, he was like, my drinking partner is pregnant right now. So, you know what I'm saying? So, but in same way, like, it was so serious about standing in faith that I was going to be pregnant. It's like, I'm treating my body as if I'm already pregnant. That includes I'm not
drinking. Oh, girl.
So,
yeah.
The men really be, like, impacted.
He gave me so much guilt. So much guilt because I wouldn't drink with him. And then he even tried to, because he can be a little bit of a butthole, but he even tried to take it to a level. He was just like, oh, so you're not fun anymore? Don't try me. Don't even try me, sir. Okay, don't do it.
Like, okay, well, I'm a little happy hour, babe. I'm like, oh, so you're just going to go without me? He's like, well, you can't drink. What's the point? I'm like, I can have Sprite. Okay.
Girl, just. A little Shirley Temple.
Exactly. So with that though, like, so overcoming it, and here's the thing, you were obedient.
I was, yeah. I was, I think because, you know, sometimes you feel like you're unsure, but that I knew that, I'm like, okay, that's God. He's giving me a command. And in 2018, the year before, it was actually whenever I decided I was going to actually build a relationship with God, like my own relationship, and do my work. So I knew that was him. I knew that I should probably be obedient in this. And that's pretty much, I was just like, okay, like I got to do this. And so, there's probably like two instances in 2019 where like somebody handed me the wrong glass or I even just tried to sip and like, oh, okay, let me just, and it was just, I just had to spit it back out, child. I was like, I can't even take a sip. Like, it's so bad. It just didn't work. But,
What did you see shift? What did you see shift when you stopped? Especially with your mental health. What did you see shift?
Sure. I just got more, I would say I got more clarity. So that 2019 was a lot for my family. So in March, I pretty much had a hissy fit, up and quit my job. So my, pretty much up and just quit my job. So my husband was mad at me all of 2019 because he felt like I just left him to deal with finances. Because of that, because of us not talking, I racked up credit card debt because I was still paying for my portion of the bills, but I was putting on credit cards. So I racked up a whole bunch of credit card debt. But I felt like I was just like in this zen mood where I was just like, God's gonna take care of everything. Like I was just so knowing, I was so believing that like God is just gonna turn everything around, everything was gonna be fine and it's gonna be great. And he told me to start this business and I'm gonna do it. And I was just like, oh, it's just gonna be great, it's just gonna be wonderful. And come September, I got a job, I was making more money, but we had to sell our house, pay off credit card debt. And we lived with his, my in-laws for about a year. And so it was just a lot. So although I was obedient and not drinking, and although I had clarity and I was building this relationship with God, I was also going through a lot of turmoil personally. And it was hard. It was really hard because whenever I say my husband was mad at me, him was mad at me. we were not in a good place in our marriage. So it took a lot of rebuilding. But if anything, it helped me to gain clarity on when I shouldn't drink, if anything. And it helped me to see that my behavior was not normal. And I really needed to somehow dig deeper into what needed to be done. And then before I even got my job, I was telling everybody, I was like, yo, I'm looking for me a job at a big company, okay? Because I need therapy. So if anything, it helped me gain that clarity and helped me realize that, like, no, I need therapy. Like, I'm not okay.
I'll walk you through this because, like, So what happened was, it kind of sounds like a lot of, even like you said, the behavior shifted to other things. Like, I got to figure out my emotional state, so I'm just going to quit this job or so I can feel okay. But then spending money and like racking up credit card debt, which impacted marriage. Like, there was just kind of this, all these things of just emotions having to deal with. And it impacted every area. And so, like, I like what you said about, you said turmoil personally, that you realized that although you weren't drinking, you were recognizing my behavior in general is not healthy. Like, what I'm doing currently is not providing a healthy space within my marriage, but also, like, for me personally in general. And so with that, and going into that, and also just realizing that, because that can be a very, like, sometimes we deflect and say it's everybody else's fault that this is happening. It's everybody else's reason for this is happening. And it's not until, and people say this all the time, it's not until you decide that you want to change that you actually change. But really, like, truly, it wasn't until Allison decided I'm changing that you really change. But I love how you were very transparent about that, because I think that sometimes we try to deal with our emotions. People talk about drinking, smoking, whatever, but we could even deal with our emotions and spending money, being super discontent with where we're at. And so we just impulsively move and make decisions, not really like thinking through the process. I know for me, like, well, my coping mechanism really before I got help eating, like, baby.
Child. Yes, child, yes. These tweets.
I graduated up until really I got therapy. That was 2016 to 2018. It was eating. And it was so hard for me. And it was also like, I gotta look good. So I racked up credit card debt. And we don't realize that we are, you know, using these things sometimes to try to replace and fill a void, but we're not understanding that our behavior and what we do can be impactful to our lives. Like, okay, so you racked up credit card debt and ended up having to sell your house to be able to pay those things, but it brought you back to this like stopping point of, I have to get me together. Because if I don't get it together, I'm not going to be good for my kids and, you know, everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, like, talking with this to someone with your background, because I'm discovering a lot of things even as I'm talking to you about it. It's like, what did I realize whenever I didn't stop drinking? It's like, what did I? And it was like, yo, like, this was some, even if I was like, I racked up a whole bunch of credit card debt, doing the math, I spent more than double of what I should have spent just paying regular utility bills. And more than I was just, oh, well, I already got it. Charge it. I already spent this money. Let's do some more. I was just doing everything. But again, it goes back to, there are probably other reasons of why you're doing certain coping mechanisms and doing certain things as to versus what you think. Like, you may think, oh, I just have a shopping problem.
Listen,
I just do online shopping. No, but you're really hurting.
No, seriously, when I was spending my little credit card, you couldn't pay me to get a credit card now and not pay it off. Like, I got my little Target red card 2 weeks ago. That was my first credit card since I paid off my JCPenney card. Only reason I did it because it was 5% off. But even when I go to Target, I'm planning my spending. So as soon as I use that card, it's paid off.
Pay it off.
Y'all not forgetting on this coin. Okay, but my mentality when I was spending at the time was, oh, I can pay this back. Oh, I can pay this back. Oh, I can pay this back. Oh, it's just $100. Oh, it's just $75. Oh, it's this. But those little itty bitty expenses, girl, it added up to $5,000. And so when it got to that point, and when Nico and I got married and we were talking about our finances, it was, I know we talk about money, but this is the whole thing.
It's cool.
It was, and we started to really work through our financial issues, or really just like together our finances.
he was like, you're a spender. Why do you spend? And it would be like stuff like I would sneak to go spend and buy something. And he would just be like, why, babe? Like, where is this coming from? And it was a comfort. It was a comfort mechanism unknowingly to just have stuff until he was like, when you start seeing that our money is going to nothing. When I started seeing us having to pay $800 a month to a credit card to pay it off, and it's literally going to dust. It's going to nowhere. It's pushing this number down, but it's going to nowhere. I realized you don't need as much as you think you need, but also, too, what is the thing that I'm trying to get from spending this money or using these other coping mechanisms? So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, girl. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to go back also to what you were saying, how you always place the blame on other people. I used to blame Jay for everything that went wrong. Jay got blamed so much. I'm surprised the man's still with me because we've been married for 4 years. It was 4 years in August. So last month, I would say a good 2.5-3 years. Everything that happened was his fault. And I didn't realize it because I knew everything. I knew how to manage money. I knew what a good relationship should be. I knew this. I knew that. I knew that. I knew where he should bank. Okay, you should bank where I bank. Okay. I knew everything. And you couldn't teach me nothing. I am the cultured one. Okay. I'm the one that's traveled outside the country. I have done these things. And child, I got hit in the face so many times. What's not like physically, but like in reality, because it's just like, bruh, like it's so many things I've learned from him with just being a parent. It's so many things I've learned from him in managing money. It's so many things I've learned from him in patience and understanding. And that's, I know we're going to get into it, but that was part of my therapy journey too. But it was just like, it was just so much that I was blaming him for that I was doing in my life to myself.
Because we don't deal with it. Because we don't deal.
Exactly.
Girl, that was me too. Like, I promise, I say all the time, if I didn't get therapy before Nico and I got married, baby, listen. Hot mess, hot mess express. Okay, sis, hot mess was a hot mess. And so I say that because when you don't deal, you're going to bleed on everybody else. And you're going to say, well, why are you bleeding on me? Like, you have to deal with it. Because when you start facing you, you realize I realized I was so selfish. I was so powerful, Allison. I was so self-righteous, judgmental, okay? Lack of compassion. That selfishness and pride were like the top two things. And I didn't realize I was placing all that on my husband. And at times still do, because you get into these moments and you still like struggle and you don't have compassion. And so it gets to a place, and on top of having to probably deal with postpartum for you, on top of that, and managing two kids. So it becomes a lot. So, okay, so switching gears and going into talking about your therapy experience, what was that like for you? What was the thing that made you, one, decide you wanted to go?
I think just like we kind of how we talked about, just gaining the clarity.
So you started therapy?
Just from getting the clarity. I started therapy last November, so November 2019. So it's almost a year. And like I said, I was just kind of at the point where I was just like, I'm not good, and I need to handle some stuff from the past. I need to handle some stuff recently. I need to handle some stuff, and it's more than just me. I can't deal with it. I need somebody to literally help me and walk me through. And it was also from talking with people like you, from talking with other. I have another friend who's a therapist. From talking to different people, and it's just like, you may need to explore that option. It was like, yeah, you're probably right. And so I just knew that, one, me getting this job I had to have some benefits so I could pay for therapy. And then I just knew I had to get it together, because also in my reflection time in 2019, I realized that Jay and I have never had a chance to be us as a married couple. So we're dealing with, so this is, let me give you my timeline. So my timeline was in 2016. We got married in August. We moved in. I finally moved all my stuff in to his parents' house. This is the second time living with his parents, okay? Just, I'm not planning on coming back no more. we moved into his parents' house in October. We had our son in November. So within 4 months, I went from being a single person to a wife to a mom, and moved in with somebody that I've never lived with before, because we didn't live together before. So learning habits, learning how a person lives, learning, trying to figure out being a mom and stuff. And then whenever you kind of get things good, we moved out, we kind of get things like, okay, we're kind of normal, getting back into this married thing, you know, okay, son sleeps, go off into the, you know, do some little things over here. We're happy. I'm pregnant again. And now we're going through all these hormones, everything again, and I have a baby, and it's like, we never got a chance to be married. And so that was another layer on top of everything. We never got a chance to be a couple. And so we're just now doing that. I could probably say at the end of last year to this year, we're just now getting to a point where we are like, okay, let's talk about some things and let's get ourselves together.
Y'all single folk hearing this, y'all hearing y'all talk about being married, baby girl.
Yeah.
Dream about children.
Yo.
Listen, it's work, baby. It's work.
It's so much work.
And I even would say, like, 4 months from going single, married, to having a baby, baby.
Baby.
My hat, if I had one, goes off to you, sis. Because I remember switching from girlfriend to fiance. We got engaged and got married in the year. So I got engaged March 11th, 2017. We were married March
12th, 2018. Oh, child, y'all was to the date, year. Oh,
to the day. And literally that mental shift was a lot for me. So to think about moving in with somebody, then being a mom, like all those things spiraling, it's work. You don't, like, nobody tells you about it's a really and being somebody's wife.
It was. Oh, yeah. You had a whole year to plan a wedding. I had a month and a half.
Girl. And then
we planned a whole pregnant. Wedding in a month and a half.
We didn't get pregnant until 2.5 years. No, I got conceived. I conceived 2 years literally after we got married. So we had 2 years of time together. And I'm going to tell you, we needed all them 2 years together by ourselves.
Yeah.
Because
my parents, I know whenever my parents got married, they were 7 years together before they had me. So
You need it, because you don't realize there is such an adjustment period in going and getting married. You, like, money, just figuring out finances takes... It took us a whole year. That was a whole year ordeal. Then just learning habits, learning and understanding each other's communication style, learning and understanding how my husband operates, learning and understanding the way he likes his personal time, how I like my personal time. Like, I think about baby boy coming into this, we are set in that communication wise. I know how he communicates. I know those things, and there's probably more that I'll learn as far as when baby gets here. But for my single people, understand, sis.
Yeah.
Don't rush it if you don't have to, because it is such an adjustment period to being somebody's wife. And then on top of that, Allison, you becoming somebody's mama.
Oh, mommy. Yeah. So, mommy.
Going into that, after kind of going through that timeline, like, how did you get to where you were like, I need to go to therapy?
Yeah, because I was just I can't even tell you what like my breaking point was, quote unquote. I think it just hit me that I was like, no, I need therapy. And it got to the point to where I was just saying it out loud all the time. I need therapy. No, like, I need to find a job because I need therapy. No, like, I need to do this because I need therapy. No, I'm going to stay in this room and not deal with that because I need therapy. Like, I just started saying it so much. And I actually went back to a podcast episode I recorded with a friend, and I looked on, like, Therapy for Black Girls. I went on to psychology.com, looked for therapists, and I found one close to me. I found one with everything I was looking for. She was a Black woman. She was a mom. She was a wife. And she was a Christian. That's what I was looking for. I'm like, I need you to be me, but with education in this field, because I need somebody that can relate to me on all levels, every single level. And so I did, and it was the best decision. And it took a while, I think, and I'm sure you've mentioned this before, like, but like your first month or so, 4 to 6 weeks, y'all really getting to know each other. Like, it's just you getting comfortable with a stranger that you know, that you're ready to open up these different facets of your life. And
I laid everything out with the first two sessions. My therapist was hitting me hard session 3. Oh, so this is how you gonna do me? Or you just gonna snatch my okay? But it does take a while just to even get comfortable to be like, yeah, open up to you.
But talk about these things. Oh yeah. Yeah. And it was just after I did get somewhat comfortable and talking with her, and we would laugh and stuff like that. And then she would be like, okay, well, didn't this happen? Da, da, da. It's like, oh, you're just going to come in for me like after we did laugh and kiki'd. Okay. Yes. Well, didn't God tell you to do this? Why are you remembering stuff more than I do? Listen, okay.
They get paid to listen.
Why are you bringing stuff back up?
Yes. How did therapy, let me ask you this question. What trauma did you discover throughout your process?
I discovered that I actually had sexual trauma. Because I never thought of it that way. Some things that I had gone through, and I'm talking about as a small child. It was one of those things where you go, why me? And did I allow this to happen to me? And I discovered, and after I told her what had happened, so I was like, I want to address some of these things that have happened. I just came out with it and talked to her about it. And I was like, well, I kind of want to talk about these things, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh, okay, so you have sexual trauma. Who? No. I think of sexual trauma as like rape. Like, that's sexual trauma to me. But what I had been through was, I didn't think it was that. But she was like, no, like, it's probably that. And it was like, maybe it was. And maybe that is why I act a certain way. Maybe that is why in college, whenever I would get upset, I would start sleeping with people. Maybe it is why, maybe that is a reason of why I act a certain way towards my husband. Because I'm really thinking about this situation over here. And that's probably the biggest thing that I discovered in therapy, was that I probably actually have sexual trauma that I need to deal with and forgive myself for it, if I'm shaming and guilting myself for it, and say, like, it wasn't your fault. If anything, and my therapist pointed out, she was like, if anything, we need to figure out what's wrong with this little person over here. And wow, they felt like, in pre-K and kindergarten, that y'all should be having these type of experiences. I was like, never thought of it that way.
Yeah, because
never thought of it that way.
I'm gonna go there just for a second. We don't know, like, and I say this, and y'all know I preach this. I have a whole podcast on it. We don't know at times what seeds are being planted early on. And we don't know how those seeds can impact us in adulthood. And we also don't know that when we don't deal with those things, how much it impacts us later on in life. And how remnants of those things can become factors into our emotions such as rejection, such as like just sexual promiscuity, just being promiscuous, like not knowing exposure early on. And that made, and truly you're like thinking like, oh, this isn't a big deal. But like that early on could have impacted, or it impacts the way you deal emotionally with things. And so it really, really plays a role in how we handle emotions. But also like, and just thinking, and I don't know this to be true, but just like in thinking in marriage, like sex is a thing. Like sex is a part of the
sex. You have to have sex in marriage.
It's part of the territory. Okay. And so when you have sex in marriage, you are literally like, you are having that experience with your husband. Sometimes it's not always the easy, you know. Okay, you know what I'm saying?
Sometimes you don't want to do it.
If you've had that, you know, you've had sexual trauma in the past. And so rejection, and we deal with rejection. We deal with wanting to be like loved on, and just all of those things can be impactful. And so even like with asking like trauma, did you discover, did you ever even find, did you struggle with rejection? Did you struggle with disappointment?
Did you
struggle with unforgiveness?
Abandonment.
Yeah.
Yes. All those different things. Yes, exactly. Struggle with intimacy. Struggle with building connections. I'm being used, and I even told Jay, and I didn't realize this may have connected this to it, but I even told Jay our first year together, I'm not going to open up to you until we've been together for at least a year. Because I'm used to any type of relationship after the first year going up. So I should have told him that you got about a year for me to really start to open up to you.
And not even knowing that that is tied to heartbreak in the past. So again, I go back and I say this, y'all, I say this all the time. Yes, Christians can even struggle with forgiveness, all these things, and we don't know until we dig it up and talk through it. And so it festers. And so I think, so with that though, with the impact of knowing, like having these things, how has therapy helped with you talking through some of that? Because girl, I was in therapy 2 years with the stuff I was dealing with. And then went back.
Right? Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we almost going into like 2.5 years. But with that, like, how did therapy help you?
Therapy has helped me really look at, I guess you could say, mental health and life in a different perspective. In scheduling things out, I guess you could say, and realizing my triggers, that's probably a big one. In facing reality on some things, because there's definitely been times where, like I said, even where I was blaming Jay for a lot of stuff, and her, you know, she would just, I feel like she just has like this little book that she would just like a little bag, and then whenever I would say something, she was like, oh, I got a worksheet for that, so we're gonna go through this worksheet real quick and we're going to see which one of these words best identifies what you're feeling right now. Or we even talked about like perfectionism. And what category of perfectionism do you, I didn't know there were categories. I didn't know there were, she just pulled out all this stuff and was like, okay. Whenever I was stressing out at work, we talked about work self-care kits. Whenever I actually went through a mental breakdown at the end of July, she, and praise God, I already had a therapist. So whenever I was having all these thoughts, and that's a detailed story in itself, but whenever I was having these thoughts of wanting to just numb myself with pills and medication, and although I was communicating how I was feeling and that I wasn't feeling good and I wasn't feeling right, but I was trying to be obedient to my husband as a good wife, and stay at this job, even though I was stressed out beyond all means. And then I get to a point to where I want to numb myself because my mind is just racing. I can't sleep. I haven't eaten in 2 weeks. I haven't slept in the past 3 nights. And I feel like nobody's listening to me. So I just want to numb myself. When, and even though I'm a fixer, that's my perfectionism, I'm a fixer. Luckily, I had a therapist who I could just text and say, I'm not having normal thoughts about myself. I'm doing this, and I'm going to keep doing this until I feel numb. Luckily, at 11:30 at night, my therapist, who I already built a relationship with, called me, because she just so happened to look at her phone, called me and was like, hey, we need to talk through this. Hey, you need to go to the hospital. Hey, there are things going on. And she was just with me every single step of the way, and I appreciate her for all of that. But it's really just being my best word to describe. It's really like having that friend that won't judge you, but is so educated that she can really help you through some things and help you take what you're going through and, like, really, we're going to walk through this step first. And then next week, if you come back, we're going to do this step. And then we're going to go through this step. And we're going to do this. And I'm going to check up on you. I'm going to hold you accountable. And because I want you to make you and have you do progress. Because you can't go to therapy unless you're ready.
Oh, say it again.
You can't.
Can you say it for the people in the back? They didn't hear
for the people in the back, one more time. You can't go to therapy unless you're ready to really do the work.
We just had a moment of silence. We just had a moment of silence. How many times have I said this, y'all? You can't go to therapy unless you're ready to do the work, baby.
No.
Okay, back on
unless you're ready to really hear some stuff, child.
I want to take that little itty-bitty piece situation you can talk through and come back, and we're going to rev it back around to this, because I want to touch point, you know, our father in this as well.
Okay, yeah.
That allows you to see again how you cope and have someone walk you through that process. Many times coping, and we don't have a soundboard, we don't have anybody saying, are you okay? Sometimes it's just like, oh, deal with it, oh, just do it, oh, just go. And like you said, you were so stressed out to the point where you were just like, look, I'm gonna make myself feel better, since everybody else is kind of just not hearing me and not hearing what I gotta say.
Yeah,
I'm gonna just make myself,
ain't nobody listening,
because I just and what that did was it initiated you seeking out help to then further be able to get the help you need to get back on track.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, again, that's further even showing the layers. Again, y'all, I say this all the time, we don't know the layers of sometimes how much we are dealing with that we have never been equipped. We may never have been equipped to handle. Mama and daddy didn't teach us when you feel this way, what you do. I know my mama didn't. My mama was like, girl, you all right? Or go pray.
You good?
Or seek the Father, or something of that nature. Or talk to me.
Or guilt you.
Or, ooh, baby girl, listen.
Or guilt you. Because I was told.
We ain't got that kind of time, sis.
I'm just saying, because I was told, let me tell you, because I was told that I'm not happy in my job. I'm mentally stressed out. Well, I was just happy that I had a job back in my day. Oh, okay.
Okay, that's great. And here's the thing, and that becomes the narrative that we believe. So then we start to then shame ourselves for not being grateful. We shame ourselves for not feeling like I'm good enough. We shame ourselves for these things, but I'm literally having reactions to this environment that don't seem healthy. And I don't genuinely know what to do at this point. And so that's why people get put off their jobs for time off, because their body is reacting to the stress. And the doctor says, you need time off. Let me give you time off.
Towards me.
And so that's what I'm saying. So like, if my body is reacting to this, this is not healthy. I remember when I worked a job, girl, and I was literally so stressed. I would walk into the job with body aches. This is when I first graduated from grad school, my undergrad, my first job out of college.
Yeah.
And I was literally stressed from the top of my head to the soles of my feet, and body aches, because the environment was so stressful. And so with that, though, these are things that you could be physically experiencing, still be a Christian,
and still mm-hmm. want to seek counseling and may not even know, and somebody telling you to, like, oh, God's going to take care of it. Yes, God can. But sometimes God will offer and have other people walk you through this process. He talks about mm-hmm. the body.
The ram in the bush.
Yes, amen. So talk about, how did therapy impact your relationship with God?
Ooh, therapy impacted my relationship with God in the sense that, so I was doing more journaling. I think that was the first step with me, really. So I did more journaling. I had to realize that because I was going to therapy, didn't mean that there was something wrong with me, didn't mean that I was crazy. It just meant that, because you hear that too, if you go to therapy, you're crazy or something wrong with you. But it was just the fact that I just needed a different type of assistance. I needed somebody else in my life to help me through those things, and that it was okay, and that God didn't want me to struggle. God wants you to rest. God wants you to be at peace, and God wants you to be in a good, healthy place so that you are able to manage different things. Because if you can't manage what you have now, and it's okay if you can't, that's why we're talking about therapy, that's why we're talking about different resources. It's not that there's something wrong with you, but God just needs you to be open to different things, because in you being open to new resources and to different things, then you are now being able to be open to more of what he's requesting of you. Of what he really needs from you. So yeah, it can really just go there. I mean, it can really be that thing where you're just thinking like, it can really get to a point where you feel like you can fix everything, you can do everything because you're supermom, you're superwoman, like you've got this and it's okay, but then you crash.
Period.
and when you crash, most of the time you burn. As a woman, you are probably already wearing multiple hats even before you became a mom. You're already wearing multiple hats. So if you crash and burn, these other hats that you were wearing crash and burn as well. So you have to be sure that you yourself, you are taking care of yourself first and foremost, because an analogy I always use is that a car cannot run on fumes. You have to have gas. So if you don't have no gas in your tank, you are literally wearing off fumes. So if you're sleeping, you're tired, and there's going to be times we're going to be sleeping and tired, right? Yeah, I had to stay up last night because they had a runny nose and they was coughing. And, I'm tired today. When we're talking about, like, continuous exhaustion, we're talking about all the time. We're talking about whenever your mind is not right, whenever you just going through the day just to go through the day. I'm waking up to finish the day. Like, whenever you're going through all these different things, it's okay to realize that you need another layer of help. It's okay as a Christian to say, I need another layer of help, because God wouldn't create these people to say these great words to you, to have these other resources to help you out if you weren't meant to use it. And that's just like, even now, it's been 3 weeks since I've seen my therapist. And it was even I was just like, I just can't do therapy now, because financially, I got a new insurance company. My therapist founded my insurance company. And I don't want to switch. Not at this time. I don't want to. But I'm like, I can't go to therapy anymore because I can't pay for the session. But it's been 3 weeks. And I'm like, well, I'm going to work about 3 hours more at work so I can work this out, because I'm like, no, I need this. I need this. I do. I do, because I done been through all the little stuff I done went through in 3 weeks, and I'm like, I need to talk to somebody about this.
But I want to say, you said some good things. You said God doesn't want us this tired.
It says in the Bible. It's in Psalms. Like, literally, it's in the book of Psalms.
And so in thinking about this again, it helps you to see, like, I'm not made to be tired like this all the time. But not only that, I'm also at a point where I have to deal with what is making me stressed, what is making me overwhelmed, what is making me at this point of burnout, what is making me even feel
like shamed about the fact that I have to do all these things and try to fit this hat that the world creates for us to make us think that if I'm not this person or if I'm not this way, that God disapproves of me or that I am not good enough to be his kid because I'm not doing X, Y, and Z. And God wants our well-being. The Bible says that I pray you prosper as your soul prospers. If my soul is going to prosper, I need my soul to be at a place of peace. Like Jesus said, at peace I leave with you. And so I'm glad you said that because we can create these standards of ourselves thinking that God's placing these things on us. And truly God wants our soul to be at rest. He wants us to be at a place of peace. So going with that, how do you think that this process helped you build your relationship with God?
I'm having different revelations, right? But even what I just said, that God doesn't want us to be tired, overwhelmed, and stressed, and to struggle, and to endure. Sometimes it's just the simple fact of God's like, I meant for you to endure. I meant for you to go, yeah, we already knew you were going to go through some things, but I didn't mean for it to go in a way that you kind of just force this endurance on yourself. Like, I wanted you to do it in a way that you still called on me and you still depended on me. And whenever things got a little rough or a lot of rough, that you still called on me. So I'm still kind of learning that lesson in a sense because I'm still in that process of, you know, like, okay, like, I don't need to fix it. I don't need to fix it. I can just be like, okay, Lord, coming to you today, and we're going to have this prayer time and this quiet time and this dedication. Dedication is a thing. So it's teaching me that some different things that I may be like, you know, like a defensive mechanism or different mechanisms that I may have developed or different traumas I may have endured can prevent me from not only personal relationships, but spiritual relationships. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. It's just really breaking down some of these past traumas and past things that I've gone through so that not only that I can heal and be better to my husband and to my kids, but I can have a better relationship with God. Because where I, like I say, where I may have been defensive because I'm used to being abandoned and I don't want to let go of that and I'm still working on that, but I don't want to let go of that and give it to somebody because then you could just really break me up and just tear me down. I can't do that with God. And so that's probably the biggest, those are probably the biggest things that I have learned and am still going through because I even had a whole talk to myself probably last week and just tell myself like, okay, like we get ourselves back together because this is not what God had for us and we're just pretty messing ourselves up. When you get it back together. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And so, you know, I appreciate that. I appreciate your transparency about all of this because it gives a true raw testament to the healing process. The process in which we have to deal with stuff, and it's so good. So one, I just want to say thank you for that, and two, thank you for being on the podcast, sis.
Thank you for inviting me, Pooh. Yes, Pooh, thank you. I appreciate it.
So where can the people find you at?
Yes, peoples. And so I am on Instagram at The Calling FM, THECALLING FM. And that's pretty much you can find everything about me at this point. Or you can send me an email at I haven't had to get this out in a while. Sorry. Your BFF. We haven't been socialized, child. Your BFF. At mommys@mommysmove.com.
All right. Well, I will have all of Allison's information below for you all. Thank you so much, Allison. I have enjoyed this conversation thoroughly, sis. And
thank you.
Y'all soon.
Bye.
Bye.